All right, so chapter 9 is going to be core training concepts, starting on page 224. What NASM really focuses on with any of their core training is really trying to get you to understand what exercises in core training belong to what stages. So what are the three stages of training again?
Stability.
Stabilization.
Strength. Power.
And power. Okay. So we need to understand that there are different exercises that involve the core musculature that also cater to more stabilization, cater to more strength, and cater to more power. If we had a beginning client, what type of core training should we start with? Yeah, core stabilization training would be the best to start with. Okay. That's kind of why they have these next three or four chapters are focused on teaching you the different modalities of training within their model, their OPT model. So introduction to core training starts on page 224. So the core musculature, we must first define what makes up the core. And directly on page 225, they have a definition of core. Okay, the structures that make up the lumbopelvic hip complex, including the lumbar spine, the pelvic girdle, the abdomen, and the hip joints. Okay, so the way that I would describe if a muscle is a core muscle or not is if it acts on, meaning it moves or acts on, the spine, low back region, pelvis or pelvic girdle, and or hip joint. Hip joint is the ball and socket joint. It literally goes like this. Okay. Therefore, when you think of core muscles, I don't want you to think of, obliques and rectus abdominis. I want you to think of all muscles that act on the spine, hips, pelvic girdle, and low back, that whole area. Okay. Or the lumbopelvic hip complex. So, give me an example of a muscle that acts on the hip.
Gluteus
maximus. Good. The gluteus maximus acts on the hip. Is that considered a core muscle?
Yes.
Yes, it actually is considered a core muscle. Okay. So when we do something like a glute bridge, that's actually a core exercise. Okay. What other muscles act on the hip or low back?
Serratus.
Serratus, not quite. Serratus acts on the shoulder joint or the shoulder girdle. What did you say?
Hip flexors.
Hip flexors, good. What are the two hip flexors? Anybody know them?
TFL1.
Well, yeah, there's kind of like three hip flexors, but yeah. So the TFL.
Psoas.
And.
Vastus.
Rectus femoris, the middle, largest, longest quadricep. So those are the three hip flexors. Do those act on the hip?
Yeah.
Well, they're hip flexors, so yeah. Does that mean they're core muscle? Yes, it actually does. Okay, but there's a difference between core stabilization muscles and core movement or movement system muscles. Okay, so they call the local stabilization system in the page 225 at the bottom. The local stabilization system is going to be all muscles that don't move joints. They more or less hold joints in place. Okay, an example of that would be something like the transverse abdominis, which is deep, the deepest core muscle. Or in your abdomen, we'll say. Internal obliques are kind of considered the stabilization system too because they don't have too much movement. They do a little bit of lateral flexing and rotation, but not too crazy. So actually, if we turn the page to 226, you have the three areas. You have the table 9.1, you have the local stabilization system, the global stabilization system, and the movement system. The local stabilization system of the core involves the transverse abdominis, internal oblique, lumbar multifidus, which is just basically a muscle that weaves in and out of the spine vertically, and the pelvic floor muscles, and the diaphragm. Okay, diaphragm does what? Helps you to breathe. Okay, so the diaphragm does not move any joints. It just more or less contracts. Everybody hold their breath. Holding your breath, which typically people do during heavy lifting, right, actually stabilizes your core because the diaphragm contracts to stabilize, okay? Also, we have the muscles of the pelvic floor. You can imagine that the diaphragm pulls down and opens up the lungs and contracts this way. Pelvic floor does the exact opposite and comes up here. Okay. Anybody ever heard of Kegel exercises?
Yes.
Okay, what's a Kegel exercise? What are Kegel exercises?
Exercise so your vagine does not look like lizard's sleeve.
Okay, there we go. That might be one way to describe it.
This guy, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. What type of population does Kegel exercises? Women that are pregnant, because what happens when the baby puts all the pressure down there? It can kind of stretch and make weak the pelvic floor muscles, which might make them pee when they laugh or something like that, okay? So Kegel exercises, literally, you practice holding back your pee and your poo. Everybody Kegel on 1, 2, 3. Hey. Hey. We're all Kegeling. Just don't imagine it. Don't get that imagery in your
too
mind.
Too bad. I already went.
You know, you're sitting in traffic and you holding it.
That's what it is. There you go. We're practicing holding back our waist. That's a Kegel exercise, okay? So that's how you actually exercise the pelvic floor. During of which, if you hold your breath and Kegel at the same time, oh my God, all of a sudden you have a perfectly rigid, strong core. Everybody try it really quick. Hold back your pee and your poo. That's a Kegel. And then hold your breath and see what happens. See if your core gets tight. Yeah. Really tight, right?
Automatic.
Okay? That's one way to teach someone a bracing technique during exercise. Except you just make it a little less awkward. Hey, Mr. New Client, I want you to hold back your piss and shit. okay. You get the point.
So you'll know if they don't do it, they'll be urine all over.
Yeah, if they don't do it, they're just going to be peeing and pooping themselves the whole time. Okay. All right, we're just way too far down that rabbit hole. All right, so the pelvic floor muscles, yes, those are your Kegel muscles. Those are the ones that hold back that urine and poo, and diaphragm will contract down, and then you have your transverse abdominis, which contracts the abdomen sort of inward towards the spine. It basically pulls inward, everything kind of that way. And the internal oblique kind of does that as well, and the lumbar multifidus actually holds the spine straight, we'll call it. It technically does spinal extension, but more or less it just holds the spine erect. Okay. So when we work out, give me an example of a workout that focuses on the local stabilization system. Or an exercise, I should say. A plank, okay? Why does that focus on the local stabilization system?
Because you have to hold your stomach together to keep it.
It's a hold. It's an isometric hold, okay? Another example of the local stabilization system workout or exercise would be a glute bridge, okay? In which you practice Kegeling and holding your breath. You don't have to hold your breath because you want to typically breathe through it, but you can practice contracting that entire core region. Okay, so core training is broken up into two different ways, in my opinion, right here. You have movement core exercises, which is going to be the global stabilization system and the movement system, and isometric core exercises, which is more local stabilization system. Which one should you strengthen first, local stabilization system or the movement system?
Local.
Local, why?
Because it's supporting your spine.
Yeah, it's going to support your spine. Is a squat a core exercise?
Yes.
Yes, why?
You have to squeeze.
You have to make sure you contract your entire core. Otherwise, you're folding forward or you're falling or becoming a limp noodle in the stomach region and going to hurt yourself.
You're using hip flexors also.
And you're also using glutes and hip flexors and lots of core muscles as well are very active. That's why a squat is a great exercise because it's very all-encompassing. But also it's a very good core exercise, especially a barbell squat or a heavy barbell squat or a front squat. Anybody ever try a heavy front squat? And just their whole core just lights up, okay? You can imagine that's working the local stabilizers to hold the core tight and stable as you go through the joint motions, okay? So at the top of page 226, they talk about human movement efficiency. They start with optimal neuromuscular control is made up of, we'll say, proper length-tension relationships, which is balanced muscles around the joints, normal force-couple relationships, which is equal strength on both sides of the joints, and then normal joint arthrokinematics are basically going to be just normal joint movements, we'll say. Yeah, joint movements. And all of those lead to optimal sensory motor information being sent back to your spine and communicated to your muscles, which leads to optimum efficiency and tissue recovery. Is that really that important to know? Not really. They don't really quiz you on that sort of stuff. They're just letting you know that if you have optimal balance and optimal strength, you will have optimal input and optimal movement. Okay. So yeah, we talked about the local stabilization system. So I group the global stabilization system and the movement system together because NASM does on their tests. The movement system, you could just think of, or the global stabilization system and movement system, I call the movement system, as I encompass all those muscles into one group, because all of them perform movement at a joint. Psoas does hip flexion. Quadratus lumborum does lateral flexion of the spine. Rectus abdominis does spinal flexion. You get your adductors and things like that. Then you have your major movers, which are like lats, hip flexors, hamstrings, quads. Those are all going to be in the core as well. Which muscle of the quads is definitely acting on the hip? That middle big one. Rectus femoris. Good. Okay, so that's definitely a core muscle. Okay. So they talk about the global stable or the movement system and the global stabilization system a little bit. The main thing, actually, that test that comes or the test question that comes up is typically around the local stabilization system. Which muscle is part of the local stabilization system? It's going to be either the internal obliques or specifically the transverse abdominis. The transverse abdominis is a part of the local stabilization system, and it stabilizes the spine by just squeezing in. That's typically the test question that comes up around there. Then we move over to the next page and talk about the scientific rationale for core stabilization training. So when we talk about bracing the core or contracting your core, you know, like, oh, contract your core, you know, when you're doing a squat or something, they're really focusing on just using your local stabilization system to make sure that you don't have movement going on in the core. Okay? Dancing, though, you need that movement in the hips. Okay, you aren't using your local stabilization system. Okay, I'm a good dancer. All right, so thank you for laughing because I was gonna be really embarrassed right there. But John's taught me a thing or two about dancing, so look out! I'll bust a move any second. All right, so the scientific rationale for core stabilization training, they're basically saying that you need to understand what the draw in maneuver is. The draw maneuver is basically where you pull your belly button towards your spine. People have trouble with this one, so I don't teach it too often, but pulling your belly button towards your spine is basically like just trying to contract everything by sucking in. It doesn't really work that way. The one that I like to go to better is going to be the bracing, which I can teach in many ways. One way I teach is enter or go into athletic position, feet shoulder width apart, a slight bend in the knees, hips back a little bit as if you're about to sit down, arch in the low back, slight arch in the low back, and then shoulders back and down. Everybody come, go into stand up. It looks funny, doesn't it? Okay? But then you can imagine, this position right here has every muscle
like,
of the core.
Like a kid with a temper tantrum. Oh, I want my gummy bear.
Every muscle of the core in this position is just locked and loaded, ready to go. Okay? Like athletic position. And remember, throw those shoulders back and down because that's going to contract the lats and arch and touch everything in your core. Just rock solid, right? Okay? Unless you're like Kamal and you don't work out. Okay. The other way is what I just said, which is hold your breath and Kegel at the same time. Everybody do it one more time.
Kegel.
There's no way that you cannot contract your core when you Kegel. It's just awesome. It's like, hey, ha, ha, ha. Then you get really good at holding in really large dumps. That was a man joke. There you go. All right. So drawing in and bracing is focusing, the main focus during your core stabilization training. Remember, we talked about the three phases of training, core stabilization, core strength, core power. One of the main focuses is to stabilize the core during core stabilization training. What do you know? So the draw, maneuver, and bracing, they talk about a little bit further. You really don't need to know those for the test, but teaching your clients one of those techniques can be beneficial to get them to understand how to contract their core during all exercises. Then they have some guidelines for core training. So on page 231, you have these guidelines tabled 9.2. Different planes of motion matter. Okay, is a side plank the same plane of motion as a regular plank? No, because one, gravity is trying to flex you in the sagittal plane. The other one is trying to flex you in the frontal plane. Good, in the side plank there. And then the transverse, if you were to grab a cable and pull and hold, which way is the gravity trying to pull you? Which back that way, which is a rotational force. Those are three different holds that hit all three planes of motion. Core stabilization training. Okay, then also in different ranges of motion, with different types of resistance in different body positions, with different speeds, as we look at table 9.2, and different durations, okay, different frequencies, and then the amount of feedback, whether it's on a balanced or a stable surface or unstable surface. And then the exercise selection goes from easy to hard, simple to complex, known to unknown, stable to unstable, in a systematic stabilization to strength, strength to power sort of way. That's goal-specific and, yeah, proprioceptively challenging. What does proprioceptively challenging mean?
Balance.
Yeah, balance-related. It's challenging your proprioceptive awareness.
Oh, I was gonna
your
say
sensory
awareness.
Information.
I had to remember that proprioceptive.
Good,
I like that.
Okay, so as we turn the page, it'll give you a little bit of studies done on core training. And does core training help prevent injury? Yes, it does. Does it help you to prevent low back pain? Yes, it does. Just some simple studies right there in the stretch your knowledge section. And then designing a core training program, well, we need to first need to determine what level we're starting our client in. Okay, so levels of the OPT model again.
Stabilization.
Strength. And power.
You know, okay. core training is like basically planks and the whole entire night, correct?
So anything that works out the muscles.
Okay,
the core.
Now where I wouldn't say working with someone that's obese, but really kind of, really obviously overweight. You know what I'm saying? So would you start them off doing planks and like core exercises, stabilization, and like stuff like that? That's
yes.
Like, if they can hold their own weight up, basically.
If they can hold their own weight up, yeah. Sometimes if they can't hold a plank, then I might do an elevated plank, which is a regression, on a table like this. Okay, this is going to be a lot easier than all the way up flat on the floor.
I'm glad you said that. Okay. Now, what's the difference between doing a plank on the floor and one of my coaches that I work with put like two tables together, basically two massage tables together, and I was doing it over like holding it. Is that was it just like a motivational thing?
No difference. It's basically if you fall, you'll die. Just a scare tactic.
<All right. laughs>
Which is not safe, but you know, if it's for an athlete, you know that they can do it, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the levels of core training are the stabilization, strength, and power. So we need to determine what level we're programming for. Okay, typically all of our clients start off where?
Stabilization.
So they should be doing core stabilization exercises. Let's check out a few core stabilization exercises. Okay, what you'll notice about core stabilization is that there's no movement of the core going on. The core or the abdomen stays in one spot. So marching, I don't use that one. I might use marching in a glute bridge position, but typically just this type of marching is way too easy.
Marching?
They're lying on their back, just literally lifting their one leg up and the other leg up. Without they're in a glute, without not being in a glute bridge position. Just kind of lift one leg, lift two legs, that sort of thing. Two-leg floor bridge, though, that's a really good one for clients. You guys do that in your core training, okay, in a little core warm-up. Then we have, Supermans and or Cobras and or, yeah, that sort of thing. Floor prone Cobra on page 236. And a prone iso ab or a plank. Know what a prone iso ab is because sometimes they do label it that way on the test, prone iso ab, as opposed to calling it a plank. So NASM gets a little tricky in that sense. Yeah. Okay, so then you have core strength. Core strength, what you'll notice, is going to be movement of the core. For instance, a crunch belongs where?
Core strength.
Core strength, because it is movement of the core. You're flexing your spine. That movement, therefore, means it's a core strength exercise. Back extension, reverse crunch, cable rotation, okay? You're moving your core, therefore it has to be a core strength exercise. All right, then when you get into core power, it's basically throwing something using your core. That's pretty much the way that I'd describe it. For instance, rotational chest pass, in which you rotate your core to throw or to pass using your chest muscles. Pullover throw. Okay, basically like a crunch, but with a medicine ball, and you're throwing that as fast as you possibly can. Rotational medicine ball oblique throw, front medicine ball oblique throw. Soccer throw, medicine ball slam, those can be some core power exercises. So, implementing a core training program, basically it requires that the fitness professional follow the OPT model, stabilization and strength and power. And on page 242, you have the core training program design template, in which they give you some ideas for core training. You don't need to know this for the test, this bottom table 9.3, but it's just kind of good to refer to if you're creating a core training program for someone. I typically just follow what I'm doing in their actual program with the rest of their major body parts or rest of their other body parts to keep the same similar sets and reps to keep cohesiveness throughout the whole program. So how do you fill in the template? If you look at page 243, figure 9.5, the OPT template, in the core balance and plyometric section is where you can include or add these core exercises. So they included floor bridge and floor prone cobra. You can guarantee that that is a beginning client because those are both stable core stabilization exercises. Okay, so when you design a core training program, it's just very simple. You create a few core exercises before you get into the resistance training. Why would you want to do it before you get into resistance training? Or their major work portion of the workout?
Because
you've
warmed them up.
To warm up their core so that it can stabilize while doing the major movements that you're going to have them do that day. Squats, maybe some deadlifts or push-ups or bench press or whatever you may be having them do that day. Is there any question on core training? So what about the myths? Oh, yeah, go for it, Art.
So, yeah, so the floor bridge, floor prone, those I usually do stat. These are motion, obviously. So
for which one?
Both of those there in the yellow. Floor yeah. bridge. So we're talking about motion.
Those are not motion. Those are isometric. They're holds.
How did they have for 12?
So two sets of 12 reps, that's basically you could be doing make it a repetition. For instance, with the floor bridge, you press up and go into the bridge and then slowly lower your hips back to the ground. That's still a stabilization exercise because you're stabilizing the whole core as you move the hip. Okay. And then floor prone cobra is you're just opening up off the ground, getting your chest off the ground, and then lying flat, then opening up and lying flat. I typically would use those as a hold way before that, use those as repetitions because they don't really, I'd rather have them hold the whole time and make them use more or do more muscular work. Okay. What about any myths around core training?
That if you do a bunch of crunches, you're going to get abs.
Yeah, correct. Abs are, you must remove the abdominal fat before you could have any chance of getting abs. Abdominal definition, okay? Meaning your skin folds through your abdominal region, wherever you may pinch, need to be below 10-ish, okay, or below 11-ish. Okay, so if you're working on a 15 right here, you probably don't have abs in that lower region. If you have a little bit less up here, you might have abs. Most of the time people don't, or have upper abs, but don't have those lower abs, because most people store the most fat right around the lower part of their belly button, okay? So how do you lose body fat? Well, you do other types of training. You don't do core training. Core training is to strengthen the core, not necessarily burn extra calories to lose fat. Maybe some cardiorespiratory training, maybe eating well. Huh? Eating well might work, yeah. They always say abs are made in the kitchen. I mean, if you're eating pretty perfectly, you're going to be burning body fat, and that's going to lead to less skin fold measurements around the abdomen. And lead to having definition in your six pack. Any other myths around core training or core or anything? Get shredded.
Still it.
Yeah. Oh, do you need to do core training 100% all the time? You need to have some sort of work in there that's going to warm up the stabilizer muscles or the local stabilization system. Especially if you plan on lifting heavy that day, for sure. Can your client's whole program be based around core training in the very beginning portion? Yeah, absolutely. But you want to make sure you include other major joints too. But maybe, you know, side plank to cable row. Okay, that's a core exercise while working the back. Maybe a single arm cable chest press. That's rotating, but you have to hold it stable, steady to do that. There's ways that you can integrate core into every single exercise, too. Because to tell the truth, you shouldn't move, or you shouldn't be, you should be sore in your core the next day almost every single workout that you do, because you use your core to stabilize whatever you're doing. Obviously, unless it's maybe biceps and triceps, because those don't use as much core, but you still need it too. All right, any other questions or myths around core training? Yes.
This is kind of a general one, but it's kind of connected. You work out, muscles are sore the next day, and yet you still do planks through that soreness. Does doing that slow down the healing process of your muscles?
No.
Does not.
Unless you, so there's something called overtraining, which they talked about in the cardiorespiratory chapter and a little bit in here. Overtraining occurs if you do work without recovering. Okay, recovery means probably 24 to 48 hours of no work to that region, or work that would get you consistently sore. What you're talking about is a core warm-up, right?
Yeah,
so a core warm-up would not prevent any recovery, because it's basically you're warming up. You're getting blood flow to the tissue. You're not necessarily ripping the tissue like
you'll
you would in a full workout.
You'll feel that soreness, but you
correct. Yeah, as long as it's a mainly just a warm-up, you're good to go. Yeah. You wouldn't do a whole two huge core days back-to-back is what I'm saying. Yeah, because you want to recover. All right, so what I want you guys to do really quickly is create a quick core training program. Blah, blah, blah.
These words.
These words.